This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Joel Sisolak, EcoDistrict Project Director at Capitol Hill Housing. Joel was previously Advocacy and Outreach Director for the Cascadia Green Building Council and also has served as Executive Director of Friends of the Cedar River Watershed. Joel Sisolak is here today to tell us about Seattle's Capitol Hill EcoDistrict, an effort to apply sustainability at the neighborhood scale. Welcome, Joel.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What is an EcoDistrict? Would you elaborate?
An EcoDistrict is sustainability at the neighborhood scale. It's in some ways a response to global challenges. On the one hand, the explosive growth of our cities. By 2040, something like 2 billion more people will live in cities around the world. So we need to make them healthy, habitable, good places to live. And then the other issue, of course, is the growing environmental issues around the globe. So this is a very local way to address both very local challenges, but also global challenges at the local scale. It's an evolution. It grew out of, the concept of EcoDistricts grew out of the green building movement. Green building movement, most people are familiar with LEED buildings, so LEED gold, LEED silver, which are ratings for how well a building performs. EcoDistricts recognize that sustainability doesn't really just happen at the site scale. It doesn't happen building to building. You need to also think about what's between those buildings? What kind of community fabric is there? What kind of infrastructure? So EcoDistricts try to address that while also working in concert with the city scale. So it's kind of that nexus between the building scale and the city scale in a very local fashion where you can innovate quickly because it's a confined space, but also do projects that are big enough to have a pretty broad impact.
What are the benefits to communities of an EcoDistrict?
They're multiple. On one hand, one of the big benefits is really around livability. As I said, we need to make our urban centers livable. We're going to have a lot more people living in them. So there are a few things that we try to address. One is building social capital, which is really about the connections between various aspects of the community. Building that social fabric. And that social fabric is really what a lot of change and health can be built upon. That social capital is part of what is good for local business. It's good for the expression of shared values. And it's that expression of values that leads toward positive action on saving energy, saving water, taking care of streets, addressing safety. And also taking care of people who are perhaps not always the first beneficiaries of development. We want to make sure that social equity is really a core piece of what we're doing in the Capitol Hill EcoDistrict. Capitol Hill is a neighborhood that's growing very rapidly. It's also growing in expensiveness. It's becoming more and more expensive. So we want to make sure that the benefits of development also serve all people. And then finally, a lot of the things that are good for the environment are good for people, good for health. Walkability, bikeability. We want to get people out of their cars, get them using different modes of transportation. So these are just some of the benefits. And of course, the benefits of having better performing buildings are good for the people who occupy them. Save them money on utility bills. The air is better inside. They are more habitable. So all of these things are benefits to the community, both that live on the hill, but also who work there and visit.
Well, in a sense, you've been alluding to this, but what type of synergies can an EcoDistrict provide?
There are a number. So there's public safety. Yeah, we're trying to activate streets, so we want more people walking, biking, slowing down the pace as they go through the neighborhood or go around the neighborhood. And that's good for public safety, more eyes on the street and slower pace. Business development. There's a concern sometimes in the business sector that doing things like bike lanes or adding pedestrian amenities can take away from parking. But more and more studies have shown that these types of infrastructure investments for biking, for walking, are really good for local business. It slows people down. People are more likely to linger and see what you have in your shop window, for example. Public health, I've already alluded to. I think in general, the sense of connection to the neighborhood, when people have a shared sense of purpose, which is ultimately what we hope happens with the eco-district. We're still in our nascent beginnings, but as people develop a shared sense of purpose, I think that itself and the social capital that comes with that is a big benefit.
Would you give a flavor of the types of eco-districts that have already been established elsewhere? What are some examples?
So the framework of eco-district that we use is relatively new. It was developed out of Portland only within the last 5-6 years. So eco-districts under that frame are relatively new. However, sustainability at the neighborhood district scale isn't entirely new. Two great developments that I point to up in British Columbia. One is in Victoria. It's called Dockside Green. I can't remember the square footage of it, but it's a redevelopment on public land. And they do their own district scale energy, district scale water, district scale wastewater. The buildings are very green. There are a lot of community spaces that are integrated. Another example, also from BC, is in Vancouver, the Olympic Village, which is now, I think it's going to be renamed Southeast's False Creek, is similar in that it was public land, it's near a waterfront, and it's a big redevelopment. Those two developments are interesting in that, you know, they're master planned communities. So there was an opportunity in those cases to do a lot of building from the ground up. So the infrastructure is new, the buildings are new. On the other end of the spectrum, which is really where Capitol Hill is, you know, we're in a community that is very well established. It's very built out. Though there's development happening, there's a lot already to work with. So we're not ripping up all the streets and starting from scratch, which, you know, there is a great opportunity for places like the Olympic Village to have that opportunity. But for us, it's really about building on what's already being done well. Capitol Hill has a lot going for it. It's already a neighborhood that uses alternative modes of transportation. It's already a neighborhood that has a great, vibrant retail sector. It has some very active community players, including Seattle University, Seattle Central Community College. There are a lot of big institutions. There are a lot of great local businesses. And the people on Capitol Hill are already well known for their civic engagement. So instead of building from the ground up in a place like the Olympic Village, we're really trying to help keep the neighborhood on a positive path forward. So it's a little bit of a different focus. Instead of building physical infrastructure, we're really focused on social infrastructure.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Joel Sisolak, Eco-District Project Director at Capitol Hill Housing. Our topic is Seattle's Capitol Hill Eco-District. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. To what extent have eco-districts been established in the U.S.? You mentioned a couple of examples from Canada, but...
Sure. There are a bunch popping up. I think the best progress to date in eco-districts in the U.S. is really on college campuses. Again, there's a place where there's unified ownership of the property, so there's the ability to do big things very fast. In terms of within cities, the eco-district model that we're also using is being used in places like Boston, San Francisco, Austin, Texas, Washington, D.C., Denver, Oakland, etc. All of these are emerging because, as I said, the model is pretty new and sustainability is not a short game. It's a long game. It's a complicated endeavor working within complex systems. Cities, neighborhoods are very complex systems. So it takes time for the benefits to truly be seen of these projects, and we're really just getting started.
How well have the eco-districts worked in other places?
I think it depends a little bit on what you mean by how well it's worked. They are working in terms of getting people engaged, finding commitment from cities to be operating at this scale, seeing the value of the neighborhood scale as part and parcel. I'm not saying that the neighborhood scale is the silver bullet, that everything should happen at the neighborhood scale, but what we're saying is that it has an important role to play as the middle ground between the building scale and the city scale. So the biggest impact to date has really been making that case and a realization that it's a good direction for our cities and for our neighborhoods to go, and is going to be really critical moving forward to make sure that cities are the places that people want to live.
How did Seattle's Capitol Hill Ecodistrict come about? Why was Capitol Hill chosen as the area for an ecodistrict?
There were a few converging opportunities that made this the right place. One is a major transit investment on Capitol Hill. We're getting a light rail station on Broadway. Seattle Streetcar is also going up the hill from the International District, and it'll go to that light rail station. We hope that the streetcar will be extended the length of Broadway. So big transit investments provide an opportunity to create this core of sustainability around the light rail station. So that was one opportunity. Another thing that happened recently is the opening of the Bullitt Center on Capitol Hill. It's actually within the boundaries of the ecodistrict, and the Bullitt Foundation is a great partner of ours. They're also very interested in how do you scale up what they've attempted to do in one building, recognizing again that sustainability doesn't happen at the building scale. How can you work in the neighborhood around that building to learn from it and also bring to scale some of the things that was learned in that project? And then finally, the history and presence of activism and work within that community. There's, as I mentioned, some strong institutions. There's also, you know, I have to credit my agency somewhat. Capitol Hill Housing is a community development corporation that's been around for almost 40 years. We've been working on developing affordable housing. So we're a pretty big landlord, property owner on the Hill, and also have been effective in promoting good development on Capitol Hill. So we're a natural vehicle that's very grounded in this idea of promoting affordability and equity. We have strong community partners. And as I said earlier, there's just a lot to build on. So this is Seattle's first effort using the ecodistrict frame. And I think there's a lot of energy and excitement about it on Capitol Hill. Some upcoming steps will be, how do we get the city even more deeply engaged in our effort and really start to dig into some of the big issues and challenges and opportunities that we see on the Hill?
Who or what groups are specifically involved in helping to establish the Capitol Hill Ecodistrict?
Some of the groups that I've mentioned. So the Bullitt Foundation provided seed funding a couple of years ago to do a report that studied Capitol Hill, that looked at both the physical and social assets on the Hill. What are its strengths? What are its needs? Looking at it within six performance areas: water, energy, materials, transportation, community, and habitat. So Bullitt was really important. Some of the other important partners at the table are, of course, the City of Seattle. They have been there from the beginning. We want them to deepen their role. Some of the big institutions: Seattle University, Seattle Central Community College, and of course the Capitol Hill Chamber, Capitol Hill Community Council. And then groups of designers have been important in the beginning, architects and engineers who understand the impact that the green building movement has had in really transforming the way we think about the spaces that we occupy as far as the buildings that we create, and are very committed to how do we bring that to scale. So they've been very important in helping to look at how to bridge that transition between focus on the building scale to the neighborhood scale. We are at a point right now in our evolution that we want to broaden support and deepen engagement from a broader cross-section of the community. So we're actively working on that because ultimately we want the ecodistrict to be an ongoing project that's owned by the community. We don't want it to be a subset of players who are meeting. We want it to be very transparent, very open, very hospitable to a great variety of perspectives, because ultimately that's the only way to make this last and really sing, because I know that this is an effort that's not going to be done in 2 years or 5 years. We're looking at time horizons of 30, 50 years. So we're going to have a good pipeline of diverse leadership that continues to come and engage in this process and carry it forward.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Joel Sisolak, Ecodistrict Project Director at Capitol Hill Housing. Our topic is Seattle's Capitol Hill Ecodistrict. What geographical area in Capitol Hill is included in the proposed ecodistrict? What are the boundaries?
Yeah, that's a good question. We are working to connect the boundaries of the ecodistrict with already established geographic boundaries, established primarily by the city in its comprehensive planning process. The city of Seattle has identified urban centers, urban villages within the city, where they're really going to be trying to focus growth and development. So clearly, these are places that need stewardship to make sure that they grow and take that growth well. We're working with three urban villages, the Pike Pine Urban Village, Capitol Hill Urban Village, and then a large segment of the 12th Avenue Urban Village. We picked up to the south there, Seattle University. They've been such a strong and active partner. And in a way, just like in any planning development effort, you want really strong, positive anchor tenants. And in a way, Seattle U is that kind of anchor tenant for the ecodistrict.
Would you give an overview of the ecodistrict report that was completed in March of 2012? What was the purpose of that study and what were the key findings?
Sure. The purpose was really to figure out where to get started. You don't want to jump in and start a project until you've done a pretty good assessment of what's already working, what the challenges are, what the assets are on the ground. So the report is a snapshot in time of the neighborhood in the frame of the six performance areas that I mentioned. So under energy, it looks at the energy performance of Capitol Hill's building stock. It looks at the energy performance of its infrastructure. It looks at the function of the transportation on the hill. What kind of ridership is there in the transit system? What are the opportunities associated with the transit investments that I mentioned? It looks at community. What are the community assets? Under that, what are the cultural assets that Capitol Hill is actually very well known for in its arts community? What is the affordability and the social assets associated with the hill? So it was an assessment of what's going on, what's going well, and then it attempts to lay out strategies for moving toward greater sustainability in those various categories. One of the things that's interesting about the report, it's a nice piece of work, but it lays out close to 70 different strategies. So it's a huge smorgasbord of things that could be done, are being done, would be nice to do. So part of the challenge following the completion of that report is, okay, where do we get started? How do we prioritize? How do we choose a good mix of projects so that we are making some early gains, plucking off the, pardon the cliche, the low-hanging fruit, and maximizing those opportunities, but also laying the foundation for some of the deeper work, the bigger projects that are going to be over a longer time horizon, but that they need to be started or they need to be moved forward in the immediate future.
Which projects are going to be the most important in your view in terms of moving towards sustainability?
I think that there are three big opportunities associated with Capitol Hill. And again, this is about building on its strengths. Capitol Hill has a lot of small buildings, a lot of small commercial buildings, and a lot of multifamily apartment type buildings. And those buildings are aging, and they're not always very efficient. So a great opportunity that we see is working with that building stock to help provide owners and the residents of those buildings with the resources they need to reduce their utility bills, to improve the performance of their buildings. On the transportation side, we see a big opportunity for some of the major institutions on Capitol Hill. One idea that is currently being developed is to create a transportation management association for their major institutions so that they can share resources on how to best get not only their employees, you know, they're big employers. We have something between First Hill and Capitol Hill, there are about 7 hospitals and 2 major academic institutions. So how do we get people to and from those places, both as visitors, but also as students, as workers? So coordinating that effort and really trying to, as much as possible, get people out of their cars. And then the other big area that we really want to focus on is affordability. This is really core to who Capitol Hill Housing is. You know, we work with populations who are 40, 60, 80% of median income. And as I mentioned, Capitol Hill is getting increasingly expensive. The risk Capitol Hill faces is that some of the very people who make the neighborhood so attractive, we're talking about the people who are artists, who work in the restaurants that are so popular, people you know who work in the theaters that are so popular, are getting priced out of Capitol Hill. So we want to make sure that it remains affordable on Capitol Hill for anybody who wants to live there. And especially, you know, we want the people who work on Capitol Hill to be able to afford to live there. Because not only, I mean, there's the social equity, social justice component of that, but also there's the environmental component of that. We don't want people having to get in their cars in the morning and driving a long distance to work in Capitol Hill and then getting in their cars again and driving home. We want the community to be a place where anybody who wants to, anybody who works on Capitol Hill can afford to also reside there.
So what are your next steps to make all of this happen?
In the short term, we're looking at, again, what are some of those most obvious imminent needs, including like addressing transit-oriented development around the light rail station on Capitol Hill, including some of the right-of-way improvements that are just clearly needed in some of the corridors on the hill. Looking at what are some of the very time-sensitive things that we want to engage in now, but then gearing up for some of the longer-term opportunities. I mentioned the retrofit of the small buildings on Capitol Hill. The small commercial buildings and multifamily buildings or apartment buildings have in many ways been missed by the energy efficiency revolution that's been going on, mostly in skyscrapers and small family homes. That segment of the building stock, which represents a huge portion of the number of commercial buildings, something like 95% of the commercial buildings are under 50,000 square feet. Multifamily buildings, where often an owner is resistant to doing major investment because there's what's known as the split incentive barrier for energy efficiency, where tenants are paying the bills, but the owners are paying for the improvements. So there's a split incentive there. Developing a model for addressing those buildings is something that we're really excited and we're digging into, but it's going to take some time because we're doing this work in partnership with a couple of national organizations who are looking at Capitol Hill as a great place to pilot a new model for reaching those buildings. So we're going to be doing the development of that model over about the next year and rolling it out. We have a great opportunity as Capitol Hill Housing in that, in addition to working on this project, we also are landlords. We own 44 buildings that are multifamily. So we have a great place to test out some of these methods that we'll be developing and then scale them up across the neighborhood. We're looking at this as an effort that's probably at least 3 to 5 years long.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
The thing that we really want to communicate clearly is that Capitol Hill is a neighborhood that has a lot going for it. We're not here to say the neighborhood needs to be fixed, that we're going to come in and be the ones to fix it. We really want to build on its strengths and help it deal with growth in a very proactive way that serves the whole community. We also want to communicate that everybody has a role in the success of this, and everyone currently and also we hope future generations will have a growing role in the importance of this effort. But people now can do everything from the big things to the little things. They can do small behavior shifts in their homes to save water, to save energy. They can make different transportation choices. They can think about where they shop. And ultimately, we want people to think about how they relate to their community as a whole and what their commitment is to making Capitol Hill one of the most sustainable neighborhoods, not only in Seattle, but in the country.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Joel.
Thank you.
You were just listening to Joel Sisolak, Eco-District Project Director at Capitol Hill Housing, speak about Seattle's Capitol Hill Eco-District. For more information, check on the web at capitolhillecodistrict.org. Again, that's capitolhillecodistrict.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM and kexp.org.